Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
All right, so Matt, for the last few months, maybe 6 months or whatever, Ashley has been buying plants on a regular basis. She buys them, and then she kills them, and then she'll buy another one, and then she kills it. And I was like, babe, if you're killing them, why do you keep buying them? And she looks at me and goes, just to let you know what I'm capable of.
She's a serial plant killer.
Yeah, exactly.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Man, I'm doing all right.
Good deal. Good deal. So I kind of told you before we started, but I'll tell everybody else. I don't care about this episode. No, I'm just kidding.
He's phoning it in.
I'm phoning it in, man, from vacation already. Now, we're recording early because Matt had a vacation and then I've got a vacation coming up. So we got to get episodes in the bank so that y'all don't see any lack of episodes on those weeks. Well, when we're recording this, there's only a few days left before we go down to the beach. And I told Matt, my brain already went to Florida. My body's still here, but my brain is in Florida, and I'm trying to get it back. So let's hope I remember everything I need to talk about in this episode. But
yeah, that's good. That's good. You're at least aware. So I'm not going, God dang, man. Yeah. He's out to lunch.
What
already
happened to Adam? Jeez. So before we get into it, we want to say check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can find a list of shows that we're happy to be associated with, and you can find some tips and tricks on podcasting. And I guarantee you there's going to be a show on there that you're going to enjoy. We also want to thank tonight's sponsors, Fume and HelloFresh, and we'll talk more about them coming up in the episode. Now, real quick, just some information here. Stitcher is shutting down on August 29th. It will be no more listening there, no more shows there, no nothing. So, if you have been listening to us on Stitcher, if you're currently listening to this episode on Stitcher, then probably need to find another place to listen to us, because they're stopping. They've been one of the big time podcatchers for a while now, for many years,
15 years.
Right. So I don't know the ins and outs of why, but they just are. So find us. I mean, iTunes, if you don't have Apple stuff, you can get us on, we're on Spotify. We're even on Audible. So if you listen to Audible and you listen to books there, guess what? You can listen to Graveyard Tales on Audible as well. It's not an ad for Audible. I mean, the hashtag not a sponsor, but they could be if they would just contact us. Audible, contact us. But anyway, go find
it. We've been Audible customers for years.
Yeah. Since Audible was a thing, we have both had that. Audible. So find us on a different, I mean, if you need to go to graveyardpodcast.com and you can listen to all the episodes there. Ashley set up our website to where they import there. It may take a little longer for the RSS feed to import onto the website than it does a podcatcher, but go over there. You can listen from there or just search us up on some other podcatcher.
Yeah.
Of your choice. But
yeah, there's a bunch and they all just have different interface. Find one that you like. You like the color of the icon, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll find us there. Yep. But if you are, I was a Stitcher customer for a long time. But if you are, just remember there, it's going away. We don't want you to miss out, you know, on any of the new content.
Yep. It's not us going anywhere. It's Stitcher going somewhere. So if you're current Stitcher, move over somewhere before August 29th. If you need to hit us up on our Facebook group or something and say, hey, where can we find you? Just do that. Post in the group. Somebody will help you out. All right, Matt. So let's talk about a new sponsor to the show, and that's Fume. Now, I like cold turkey on a sandwich. I mean, cold turkey with some lettuce and cheese. Yeah. But cold turkey's not good for breaking bad habits. And
it's tough.
It is. And there's other ways to break bad habits. And I'm not talking about, hypnosis or voodoo or any of our episodes that we've talked about. I don't mean that.
Mind control,
nothing like that. All we're talking about now is our new sponsor, Fume. It's spelled F-U-M, and they look at the problem in kind of a different way. Not everything in a bad habit is wrong. So instead of like a dramatic, uncomfortable change, why not just remove the bad part of the habit and you can have just a habit that's easier to deal with. And Fume is an innovative, award-nominated device that does just that. They take the bad out of the bad habit.
Yeah, so, instead of an electronic device, Fume is completely natural. Now, instead of vapor, Fume uses just flavored air. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses all natural, delicious flavors. So, I mean, you get it. I mean, we're taking out the bad and replacing it with Fume, which is good. And it's a habit that you're free to enjoy, and it makes replacing your bad habit a lot easier. And, sometimes part of a habit is that I need something in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
I do things with my hands, I'm constantly... And the Fume is such a unique little device that it's very fidgety. It's very, you can play around with it. Spin it in your fingers. You can click it. You can twist it. You can do all these things. But it's not necessarily a fidget toy. That's just an added bonus.
Right.
I mean, when you breathe through the Fume, you're getting flavored air taken from plants, all natural, and replacing any other harmful chemical that you might be breathing.
And if you watch the video, you've seen Matt and I with our bad habits exhaling here on camera. So I can promise you, you'll see more fuming rather than the other, because it's a great way to replace that.
Yeah, and not to mention, there are a lot of places now where those kind of habits aren't welcome.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having to excuse yourself and go outside or sit in the car or whatever it is you have to do.
Especially when it's hot.
Jeez. Yeah. Or freezing cold.
Or freezing, yeah.
You can pull out your Fume and you're not going to bother anybody. You're going to get the satisfaction that you're looking for, and you can keep on rocking.
Right.
Stopping is something we all put off because it's hard. But switching to Fume is easy, enjoyable, and even fun. Fume has served over 100,000 customers and has thousands of success stories. And there's no reason that can't be you too. Join Fume in accelerating humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up the Journey Pack today. Head to tryfume.com, that's T-R-Y-F-U-M.com, and use our code TALES, T-A-L-E-S, to save 10% when you get the Journey Pack today.
That's right. Tryfume.com and use our code TALES, T-A-L-E-S, to save an additional 10% off your order of the Journey Pack today. So, Matt, that's all the housekeeping that I've got for this episode. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Well, tonight we're going to look at another one of these regional areas that seem to be full of varied paranormal activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about the Michigan Triangle, yep. A lot of different things.
I don't remember that one either.
The Bridgewater Triangle. I had to come to me. But tonight we're going to look at another one of these that has a lot of odd things going on in a fairly concentrated region. We're going to look at the Big Thicket.
Oh yeah.
In Southeast Texas. Every time that, you know, Amanda asks me, what are y'all recording tonight? You know, the Big Thicket. That's what it sounds like. It's the way you ought to say it. But
with a real deep Texas accent.
My voice isn't that deep, so I can't do it. But this is pretty cool. I had heard of the Big Thicket just because of the National Preserve there and the area. And I lived in Texas for a very short period of time. But I had no idea all of this was going on there. And it was a lot of fun, you know, researching this when you consider, the wildlife and the plant life and just, mm-hmm. it's a pretty fascinating place. Even without all the paranormal stuff.
Right. Right.
So we're going to get into this. This is going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, obviously living here, you hear about the Big Thicket and you hear about, randomly you'll hear somebody say, well, I was in the Big Thicket and yada, yada happened. And just, it comes up quite often, but yeah. I never like delved into what makes it unique. Mm-hmm. And so in doing this research, I thought it was really cool. And I've got some information talking about, you know, what makes it unique, the flora, the fauna of the area, and just to kind of set you up for the stories that Matt's got, because you got to understand that area to then understand some of these stories. Mm-hmm. And Matt and I were talking about it before the mics came on, but there's some stuff that happens, and then people will try to debunk it, and you're like, that debunking does not work in the Big Thicket. It does right. not work. You know, there's no way, because this is not a large city. Yeah, there's cities within it, but where this stuff happens within the preserve is yeah. not a big city that you could blame it on outside noise pollution or light pollution or whatever.
Yeah.
But like we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all this information. You can continue the research, because this is going to be another one of those where at least my part is not going to be as extensive as it could be, simply for time's sake and, you know, ADD sake, because I'm ADD. And if I talked about it for 3 hours, I would probably veer off and my brain would be in Florida again. So just go down and check our sources and you can continue the research if you want to. And I know for Matt as well, there's some stories that he couldn't cover as well for time's sake. So Now, the Big Thicket is the name given to a somewhat imprecise region in Texas, a heavily forested area. And like Matt said, it's southeast Texas in the United States. And people have called the Big Thicket an American ark and the biological crossroads of North America. The preserve was established to protect the remnant of its complex biological diversity.
Yeah, and it's amazing how they could just get two of everything in there.
It is. I mean, it's everything. I mean, we got weasels to camels to Nessies. There's two Nessies in the Big Thicket. There might be, hint, hint, more than one Bigfoot in the Big Thicket.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Now, the Big Thicket National Preserve is located northeast of Houston. It's on the southeast side of Texas on the Louisiana border near the Gulf Coast. So I'll post some pictures in Patreon, but you can look it up too and kind of get a general idea of where it is. Now, what's extraordinary is not the rarity or abundance of its life forms, but how many species actually coexist here. It says, once vast, this combination of pine and cypress forest, hardwood forest, meadow, blackwater swamp. Where do you get that mixture anywhere else? That is a strange mixture. All of this is but a remnant. So with such varied habitats, the Big Thicket is a misnomer, but it seems appropriate because an exhausted settler wrote in 1835, quote, "This day passed through the thickest woods I ever saw. It surpasses any country for brush." So
yeah,
it's not really a thicket, and it but it is big.
Hey, and keep that in mind, because in the undeveloped areas, and it's not like Adam said, there are towns in there, but it's not like you're just driving around on paved roads and you're like, hey, we're in the Big Thicket.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of open, undeveloped, you know, country that is just covered, you know, with trees and wildlife. So,
and swamps, you know, it's, there's
and
swamps.
But it's not remote, but you can definitely get deep in there and feel like you're on the other side of the world.
Yeah, certainly get lost in there.
Oh, absolutely. So consider that when you start hearing these stories about stuff, you know, it's not like you're just, you know, walking, you take a 2 hour hike and you're really just 2 hours deeper into this mess. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like you're like on the other side of it.
Yeah. You didn't get out of it. You just screwed yourself up even more by continuing is what you did.
Yeah.
You'll be walking through swamps with gators in a minute. Now, the original Big Thicket of Texas covered between 2 million and 3 million acres in what's now mapped as the Piney Woods and Coastal Marsh ecoregions of the state. Now, it's a transition zone where southeastern swamps, eastern deciduous forest, central plains, pine savannas, and dry sand hills all meet.
Yeah.
So if you can picture that, it's wild to think. The Big Thicket is amazing. I mean,
it's like a video game map.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know, yeah. You just
all the,
hey, this looks like a desert. We just left a forest.
Yeah.
No,
right.
We didn't. We just left a swamp.
Yeah. Yeah. So millions of years ago, part of the Big Thicket was actually under sea level until the shores of the Gulf of Mexico receded to its current position. So in the last 60 million years, quote, recent times, according to geologists, the Gulf shoreline of southeast Texas submerged and emerged time after time in unison during the Pleistocene age with periodic glaciations to the north. So what it's saying is, as we've said before, the sea levels would rise and fall. So at times there would be a city may be built here and then the sea levels would rise and it would be underwater. Then it'd sink again. But it did that here too, where there was no people habitation that we're aware of, is during the Pleistocene age. So as it would freeze in a cap and it would suck some of the water out. It would recede some and then flow back in when it melted. So it was creating these like marshy, nasty grounds that to walk through because it's just saturated. But it spent a lot kinda of time.
Kind of gross.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. If you've ever walked through a swamp, it's nasty.
Ruin some shoes.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Ruin some legs. What are you talking about? So at different points in history, there were giant sloths, mastodons, saber-toothed tigers, and direwolves that were all found in the Big Thicket, and this was around 10,000 years ago. So
giant sloths.
Mm-hmm. That was my nickname in college. So even in the Pleistocene region, that area was home to many varying species of animals because of the different types of habitat that all butted up to it. You could have so many different types of animals cohabitating.
Yeah.
And there's not many other places. Yes, there are. Don't at me about this. There are other places where this happened. But there's not a whole lot of them, and certainly not a whole lot of them in Texas.
Right.
Now, this diverse habitat allows an impressive array of species to coexist, including approximately 1,320 species of trees, shrubs, vines, and grasses, or what's considered vascular plants, 60 mammal species, 86 reptile and amphibian species, 34 species of freshwater mussels, nearly 1,800 invertebrate species, just in the Lepidoptera family, so butterflies, moths, skippers, 97 fish species, at least 300 bird species, and 660 species of mushrooms. So crazy what's there. Historically, bison, jaguars, and red wolves were all included in the array of species as well. So jaguars in Texas, you know, when you think jaguars, you think South America. You don't think North America. Right. You don't think Texas unless it's in a zoo. But at one point, this was habitat for jaguars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the reasons I tell you this is so that when we get into what happens there, you'll know, A, what used to live there, B, what could still live there, but we just don't have scientific proof of, and what was there that could have created legends. Now, the Big Thicket was formerly known for its black bear population, but they were aggressively hunted for nearly a century before they were eradicated from Southeast Texas in the 1950s. Pretty sad. But we've seen that before. Now, four of the five types of carnivorous plants found in North America can be found in the Big Thicket, including pitcher plants, sundews, bladderworts, and butterworts. Now, the most well-known carnivorous plant, the Venus flytrap, is not found here. In the wild, these plants are found only in North and South Carolina. But you've got four carnivorous plants in there. So that tells you something about the ecosystem. Now, indigenous tribes still in the area include three major tribes of the Alabama, the Coushatta Indians, who had migrated to Southeast Texas in the 1780s from Alabama and Louisiana. These two tribes have lived all over the Big Thicket, but they now share a common home here on their 4,300-acre reservation in Polk County. So there's different areas within the Big Thicket that are historical markers and can kind of be the epicenters for some of these legends and stuff. So I want to touch briefly on the history of some of these things. Now, Teal Cemetery is within the Big Thicket. There's just a cemetery in the Big Thicket. And it's a small, secluded cemetery, and it was first used in 1893, and it's hidden deep in the woods of the Big Thicket. Well, Richard and Nancy Teal were the second European American family to settle in the Saratoga area after the Cottons. Now, Richard was born in Alabama and moved to Texas with his parents at the age of 18. In 1858, when he was 24, he married Nancy Hart, who was 16, and the young couple settled in the Big Thicket. The Teals lived in a log cabin just west of what is now the cemetery, where they raised a sizable family of 11 children. Nearby, they had an orchard and grew crops, including cotton, corn, oats, and sugarcane. One of their sons, DJ, was the first to be buried here in 1893. Both Richard and Nancy are buried in the cemetery, along with many of their children and descendants. The home site remained in the Teal family until 1978, when it was transferred to the National Park Service for inclusion in Big Thicket National Preserve. But sadly, the cabin burned down in the 1970s. So the cabin itself is not there, but the cemetery is.
Yeah, cemetery is still there. And you can see it. It's pretty cool. I mean, you know, there's plenty of pictures and videos of it. You know, and it is, it's just out there in the woods. Yeah. It's, you know, if you've ever done that, I've done it, you know, where you're out kind of hiking around in the woods and you come across a few gravestones, you know, and they're usually dated, you know,
1800s.
You know, 100+ years.
Yeah.
And there is a creep factor to that.
Sure. When you stumble upon a random cemetery, it is.
Right. So if you're out there and you come across this and you're not expecting it, it gives you kind of a little, whoa, you know, you know, what else is out here?
Yeah. But it's cool to me that at the time, you know, you could bury your family on your land. You didn't have to do what we have to do now and go through the whole crazy funeral process and put them in a specific area. If you had land, farmland, grandpa went there, grandma went there, you'd go there, and it was just a place for the family, which I think is cool. And if there wasn't so many people, you know, in towns, I think we could probably still do that. But now there's another area, the Lance Rozier Unit. A Lance Rozier Unit is the historical heart of the Big Thicket. It's home to jungle-like swamps, palmetto forest, and historic sites. The site is named for Lance Rozier, lived from 1886 to 1970, who was a Saratoga resident, a self-taught naturalist with an encyclopedic knowledge of the thicket. His work actually led to the eventual creation of the preserve in 1974. One of the other areas is Teal Road. Now, Teal Road is a narrow, unpaved road that leads into the dense forest of the Lance Rozier Unit, and it dead ends at Teal Cemetery. So if you're out there, you want to see it, you can hop on Teal Road, which is just dirt road, and take it down. You'll pass through the Lance Rozier Unit, and you'll come up on the Teal Cemetery. Now, Staley Cabin, the last place I want to talk about, it's Staley like Lane Staley. When I first saw it, I thought Stanley Cabin, and I actually typed Stanley Cabin, and then I'm reading, and I went, wait a minute, they forgot an N. Oh, no, I added an N. Sorry. So it was built in 1934. Staley Cabin is a good example of a log cabin used by homesteaders in the 19th and 20th centuries. Thinking that this site was available for homesteading, Jimmy Staley built the 3-room cabin for his wife and 4 children using pine timber cut from the property. The original chimney was made of mud and the roof had cypress shingles. Outside, Jimmy's wife Elda planted acorns that became the large oaks that loom over the cabin today. That's cool to me. That's history right there. Just the trees being there. That's so cool. Because, you know, she babysat those things. She watched them grow from little saplings. Now they're so huge. If you look at pictures, they're huge around this cabin.
Oh, yeah.
But next to the cabin, the Staleys had a vegetable garden surrounded by a hog-proof fence and an orchard of plum and fig trees. After living there for a couple years, Jimmy Staley found out that his homestead was built on Timber Company land. So the Kirby Lumber Company owned the property and tried to evict the family, but eventually they decided to let them remain after Jimmy signed an acknowledgement of tenancy. So in 1962, Jimmy Staley sold the cabin. Later owners made improvements, including replacements of the roof and chimney, In 1977, 3 years after the establishment of Big Thicket National Preserve, the National Park Service bought the cabin and surrounding property. The cabin was used as the preserve's visitor center until 2001. So, pretty cool history of some. There's other stuff there too if you want to hop in the sources and go find it, but those are some of the bigger historical areas of the Big Thicket.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. This guy just built this thing himself.
Yeah,
you know, just went out there, cut down the trees, built it up, and it's still standing, you know, enough for them to actually run the visitor center out of it.
Wouldn't it be cool, though, to still be able to just find an area and say, I'm living here, and you're just able to build something? You don't have to
it'd be great.
Buy it from people and spend money and all that mess.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it would be great. I would, my house would fall down in like 10 minutes.
It'd be some rough living in the thicket, though.
Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah. But besides just rough living, besides all the wildlife, all of the unique plant life that's there, you know, there's a lot of history behind, the people that were in and out of the thicket over, you know, the last, you know, 200 years. Criminals would use the thicket to escape local law enforcement during the early history of the Anglo settlement.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, because of the dense brush, Confederate deserters during the American Civil War used the thicket to hide and avoid the battle.
Right.
When you get into the more in depth into this story, you know, this is essentially the story of the Jayhawkers. You know, the Confederates that said, we're fighting a war for the rich. You know, they're just going back and forth about, you know, money. You know, it was called, this is a rich man's war, but a poor man's fight.
Right.
So it wasn't like they were cowards. You know, they didn't agree with what they were doing. And they said, look, at the end of the day, if slavery continues to exist, then it's going to spread like a disease. And pretty soon, you know, there's not going to be any reason for a business owner not to just use slave labor.
Mm-hmm.
So they were against that. Because it would, you know, you think about what the economy is now, what it could have been had, you know, had things been different.
Right.
These people understood. So, you know, they actually built like this little settlement within the thicket. And we're going to get into more of that story here in just a minute. But it gives you an idea of not just how vast it is, how deep and how just dense it is, where, you know, these people could just essentially live and go undetected.
Mm-hmm.
But what else could
with
live?
People looking for them.
Yeah, with people looking for them. I mean, you think, what else could live out there and go undetected? What other things could occur and go undetected? Well, one of the things that it is, the Big Thicket is most famous for, are the Saratoga Lights. And we've talked about other light phenomena in Texas, but these are pretty unique. They occur along Bragg Road, which is one of the only roads through the forest in Big Thicket. Bragg Road is in Hardin County, and it's an 8-mile stretch that at night really amps up. Okay. I mean, we're talking about essentially like it's wide enough now for two cars to pass. Okay. Mm. Just
two
barely.
Whole cars.
It's not a highway by any stretch of the imagination. But at night, some travelers report the Saratoga lights as these orbs of light that are about the size of a small pumpkin. And the colors range from light blue to green or yellow. And the lights are more active in the early evening, but these lights appear and disappear at random during the dark of night, and there's really no good explanation. This is not a situation of swamp gas. That's not, there's not around there. Before the, before we started recording, Adam and I were talking about how it doesn't make sense that it would be headlights, because where are they coming from? You know, when we talked about the Marfalites, we said, you know, a lot of people said it's reflections from headlights. It's kind of a optical illusion. Where are these headlights? We're out in the middle of the woods. You know, there's not a highway like right over there. I mean, it's just not.
You would see and hear the car as well as the lights. And if it were lights, they wouldn't be blue and all these other colors.
Right. They wouldn't. Yeah. It'd be white, yellow. It'd be about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason for that is what it's now called Farm Road 1293, but Bragg Road originally was a 7-mile bed for a Santa Fe branch line used for hauling oil from the Saratoga oil fields along with logs and cattle. And the railroad was laid in 1901, but they removed the rails in 1934 and left the bed, and it became a frequently used road going through the big thicket. So what does that tell you about Bragg Road? It's straight.
Yep.
It's as straight as they come, because it used to be railroad tracks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when's the last time you saw a train take a sharp turn? You don't.
Not and make it.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, when you think about this road and no other roads around it, and it's pencil straight for 7 miles, you're going to see another vehicle coming down this road a pretty good ways off.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah.
There's nothing obscuring your vision. And, you know, I brought up earlier with Adam that there's no curves. So it's not like you could be standing and looking through the trees to the left or the right and see part of the road in the distance where it curves around, because it doesn't curve around.
Right.
So there's no cars, there's no other kind of transportation that would have headlights that would reflect and cause these lights, you know, to kind of drift back and forth across the road. And as, you know, Adam made a good point, they certainly wouldn't be blue or green. But there's a lot of stories about what the lights are that have essentially just become fantastic legends. None of them are really all that explanatory. They're just really good legends. One story about the lights is that it's a mystical phenomenon that shows where treasure is buried, and that the Spanish conquistadors are out there looking for the lost treasure. That's okay. Yeah, pretty cool. We're going to talk more about that Spanish treasure here in a second.
I like Spanish treasure.
I love it. I wish I had more of it.
Exactly.
But another story is that the lights are a little bit of fire that was never extinguished after another historical event, the Kaiser burnout. Now, the Kaiser burnout was a fire set by Confederate Captain James Kaiser during the Civil War, where he was flushing out these deserters, these Jayhawkers. So he just set it on fire. You know, flush them out. It's a lot. It's a lot to burn.
Yeah.
You know, to you know, just to get out some people that didn't want to fight with you.
Imagine the damage that he could have caused ecologically to that area.
Yeah.
By doing that.
But, you know, and it did. It burned quite a lot. But as we see, that doesn't necessarily, you know, end the life, you know, the plant life, animal life. It almost reinvigorates it, and it comes back stronger.
Yep, that's true.
You know, I mean, there's, you know, I know we lose a lot of forests due to wildfires every year, but you know, in 100 years, they're going to be back. You know, it's, you know, they're not going to be gone forever. Now there's another story that's a little bit more gruesome about the lights, and I think every state has one of these, Adam. I think one of these. It's the ghost of a railroad worker.
Oh yeah.
Who was decapitated during a train wreck or some other train accident while on the Saratoga line. His body was recovered, but his head was never found. And according to the legend, the light is from his brakeman's lantern as his body continues to search up and down the line looking for his missing head. We've got one of those in Tennessee.
Yep.
Chapel Hill. Yeah.
Everywhere that's got railroad tracks will have that legend.
Adam, let's take a minute and talk about one of our longtime sponsors, HelloFresh. Now, you have heard Adam and I talk about how great HelloFresh is, and we both thoroughly enjoy it, and so do our families. And you may be thinking, well, I've heard HelloFresh, but what is it? HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. It is farm fresh ingredients delivered right to your door with easy recipes that you can follow and make delicious gourmet food right at home without a trip to the grocery store, without wondering, hey, what are we going to have for dinner tonight? And it's more affordable than going out to a restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
You know, fall is right around the corner, and HelloFresh is here to help you plan for the busy season ahead with tasty dishes delivered to your door. Simply choose your recipes and pick your delivery date. Then lay back and enjoy the last days of summer, knowing that dinner is covered.
And does it seem like your family is hungry all the time?
Mine is.
I know Michael is. Michael is always eating. Well, the good thing about HelloFresh now is that you can add snacks, sides, and more to your weekly HelloFresh order. Just simply shop the HelloFresh market and take your pick from a curated selection of over 100 add-on items, which is great because, that's one less trip to the grocery store to get snacks. You can get them from HelloFresh. And we actually just finished eating a HelloFresh meal right before we started recording. We got the Beef Flauta Supreme thing. And you know me and Tex-Mex, man. Oh, my goodness. And HelloFresh, to me, their best meals are their Tex-Mex-style meal. But I'm a Tex-Mex freak. So you get the beef and the cheese in the flour tortilla. You crisp it up. You put a red pepper crema on there, which is not spicy. It's just got the good red pepper flavor. And then tomatoes and onions on it. Dude, let me tell you, that is one of my favorite meals from them. I just finished eating it, and it just makes me happy. Michael loves it. Ashley loves it. It's so easy to fix. So if you want to join my family and Matt's family in loving HelloFresh, then all you've got to do is go to HelloFresh.com/50graveyard. That's 50graveyard, and use our code 50graveyard for 50% off plus free shipping.
Yeah, that's right. Just go to HelloFresh.com slash 50 Graveyard, 50 Graveyard, and use that code 50 Graveyard, and you get 50% off plus free shipping. I mean, it's an unbelievable deal. You're absolutely going to love it. See why HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. And if you didn't know that Bragg Road used to be a railroad, railroad tracks, then it might seem a little odd, but yeah. I mean, you know, there's a reason.
Why is there a railman on a dirt road?
On this dirt road, what's he doing? Yeah. He's lost. You know, his head's not anywhere around here.
Yeah, he got way off course looking for his head.
This one, though, I found this story just poking around, and I had never heard this one before. This story is about is one of the stories where the husband is looking for his bride. As the story goes, the couple was honeymooning at the Bragg Hotel, which used to be at the end of the road, and by some mysterious circumstances, the bride was murdered. And the light is the groom who continues to search for his bride's killer.
Hmm.
So that's it. That was a new one. I had not heard that before.
That's new to me, too.
Now, there is another story, not about the lights, of a man who got lost out in the woods.
Easily done.
Well, he comes across this old woman whose face was concealed by a bonnet. And he said that she gave him some rancid water and then disappeared. Well, that's kind of crappy, you know?
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. I was like, okay, rancid water, yuck. But others tell of a little sweet old lady that will stop and ask for directions. But when the visitors actually see her face that's kind of occluded by the bonnet,
mm-hmm.
She has hollow eyes, and they describe her voice as being kind of a far away voice. Now, she is said to haunt the trails.
Like she keeps her voice in her pocket or something.
It's like she's a ventriloquist. Hey, she's throwing her voice.
You want some rancid water?
Yeah. There's a pitcher plant right there, and it's got nasty water in it. Yeah. And she throws her voice to the pitcher plant, and it's like, drink me, drink me.
makes sense now.
That's total crap. We just made that up because she didn't. but this lady is said to haunt the trails, and she's actually been reported seen walking straight through the trunks of trees. And they say that the scent of lavender precedes her apparition. So if you smell lavender, you may just be out in the forest. I don't know. But, but supposedly if you smell lavender, she's not far away. So, you know, we've got ghost lights. We've got ghost apparitions. Okay, so, you know, we've got a couple of different things going on here. Here's something else. Remember I mentioned the something about Spanish conquistadors and lost treasure?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the western edge of the thicket, in a small crossroads community known as Kenneflick, local people believe that a copper chest containing $1.5 million worth of jewels and money is buried there in the quicksand. Now, it has been there for 250 years or more since the pack train transporting it from Florida to Mexico was attacked by Native American warriors. It's pointed out that the old Atascosa Road, I hope I'm saying that right, that connected Spain's two New World empires passed just south of Kenneflick. So all right in this area, you know, at one point was, you know, essentially surrounded by Spanish-controlled areas.
Mm.
Now, the treasure was actually recovered in the 1930s, but they lost it in the quicksand again when the hoist rope broke.
Oh, Lord.
So in the 1930s, they figured out a way to get this out of the quicksand. And it's like when you're playing the claw machine, okay?
Yeah.
And you've got your thing, and it comes up, and then right at the last minute, meh, and it drops, and you're like, ugh. So that's what happened to these folks, is they hoisted this chest out of this quicksand, and the rope broke, and it went back down. And jeez. So they were just like, we're never going to be able to find it now. So, you know, and they didn't, according to the story. But many other searches have been made for the chest, and some claim that it's been located several times with a probe at 25 feet deep.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, if you look at those numbers, you think, well, that's really not that deep, is it? You know, that's not so bad. You couldn't get it out 25 feet. But nobody has figured out a way to retrieve it. Even with the modern engineering methods of draining and suction pumps, you know, you'd think they could just suck out the quicksand and there it would be.
Build a dam around it or something.
Yeah. And I mean, you'd think for 1.5 million, not just the cash value, but the historical value of actually obtaining this. You know, 250-year-old treasure. I mean, there's more than just monetary value there.
So if I had the way to do it, I'd better believe I'd be out there doing it.
Well, yeah. So you would think that the expense would be worth it,
right?
But be aware that the quicksand and the wetlands around it are absolutely full of alligators and water moccasins and.
Sounds about right.
Other things that would like for you to go away. Okay. So, I mean, and from what I've read, it's like, I mean, it's not like you might see an alligator. You better watch out. You might step on a water moccasin. It's like Snake Island down there.
Yeah.
It's like they're everywhere.
I'd rather deal with the gators than the water moccasins.
Yeah. No kidding.
those water moccasins are bad.
I can climb a tree. A gator can't.
Right.
At least I've never seen one.
But a snake can.
A snake sure as hell can.
Yep.
So that's one of the other I thought that was really cool. But I thought it was crazy that they hadn't been able to figure out a way. It was look, alligators or water moccasins, whatever. I figured somebody by now, if it was still there, somebody would have figured out a way to get it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. But you know, the story says it's still down there, and they verified that it's still down there.
Well, after this episode, we're going to have a bunch of people going out to the thicket looking for it.
Yeah, be careful.
If you find it, if you come away alive, Matt and I deserve a finder's fee.
That's right. We're waiters, thick ones.
Mm-hmm. Snake boots under them waiters.
That's right. So, you know, you got ghost lights, buried treasure, carnivorous plants, you know, or just being out in nature, whatever would take you out to the big thicket. There's one particular event that appears to be quite common. And, you know, you can't talk about a big open area of woods like this without talking about our old buddy Bigfoot.
Yeah, Biggie McBigfoot.
Biggie McBigfoot. Numerous Bigfoot sightings in Big Thicket. And over the years, you know, it's been known by several names, like the Wild Man of Big Thicket, Old Mossy Back.
I like, like that one.
An Old Mossy Back. Or the Raggedy Man of Sour Lake.
Or Mr. Foot.
Yeah, Mr. Foot. And it's just, it's incredible. And one of the coolest things is that if you look at a map where it'll have little pinpoints, the one I saw has the little classic Sasquatch. Mm-hmm. Everywhere where they've been reported, you actually begin to see patterns. You know, like almost like migration patterns that are, you know, or that they're traveling from one area to another. And this is the path of least resistance, or this is the path that would be most secluded for them, whatever. You know, you can actually see the path to the point that those locations are, you know, that's where people want to focus their efforts. Okay. But, you know, if you think about it, if there was going to be a Sasquatch roaming around in the woods undetected, big thicket, I mean, that would be on a short list of good places.
Oh, sure. And if you look at a map, which I'll put in Patreon, of probably the one Matt's talking about, Bigfoot sightings in Texas.
Yep.
If you look at it, the eastern portion of Texas has the most, mm-hmm. but there is a huge concentration in the area of the Big Thicket.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And some of the places in the Big Thicket that don't have as many, it's because it's not around a town.
Yeah.
There's not hardly anybody there to be able to report it.
Mm-hmm. And so it's usually reported by, you know, hikers or campers, you know, maybe local guides, things like that. They're the ones who experience it. And not only have there been a lot of sightings, there are more incidents of people hearing it. You know, there's groups that have gone out to try to mimic calls, and they'll get return calls. You know, one such gentleman that he has lived in the thicket, he says, for about 30 years. He says, you know, when he's never seen one, but he hears them all the time. And he says, the howl that you hear is so loud, and it's unlike anything he's ever heard. He said, mm-hmm. you can't even begin to mimic it. And another thing that he reports, is that weird silence in the forest that occurs, when a Bigfoot is near. We've talked about that before. You know, the bugs quit making their sounds. The birds quit chirping. You know, you don't, it just gets eerily quiet.
It is eerie.
And that has been associated with a Bigfoot being nearby, for whatever reason. You know, we don't know why. Why would Bigfoot make everybody be quiet? Maybe he's very sensitive. I don't know.
I've heard it referred to as the Oz effect. But, you know, where everything gets quiet, it's like you're transported to another realm, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, well, that goes back to that whole is Bigfoot interdimensional? Is
right.
Are the Bigfoots coming through? You know, where this, you know, portal would be, that it somehow causes this silence, mm-hmm. you know, in the region. And it's not necessarily that everything decides to be quiet. It blocks it out and you can't hear it.
Right.
So I'm digging around and I'm looking, and, you know, as Adam said, you know, there are tons and tons and tons of these sightings. So I dug around until I found a really interesting one. And this one I thought was pretty cool. Now, this happened on May 14th in 2005. And a guy named Michael Mays and a friend who also was into Bigfoot decided that they were going to go out on their own adventure. And so they had reports from Sam Houston State Park, which is, you know, right there on the northern portion of the Big Thicket. But it's a big hotspot for Sasquatch activity. So Mays and his friend drove deep into a forested area and parked. And they said they actually napped at sunset and got up at midnight and then began driving along Forest Service Road 208. Now, they said it was several hours and they had seen no other cars. When they came over a rise near Stubblefield Lake, around 3:15 a.m. and saw something in front of them. And May says, this thing just standing in the road. He said, and then it turned and it walked off into the woods at 3 o'clock in the morning. And May says it was nearly 7 feet tall and it had this tremendously wide body. That was May's first Bigfoot sighting. And he says, there's only two things it could be. A person dressed up in some type of monkey suit, or it was what we were out there looking for.
Yeah.
And he said he and his friend drove for several more hours that night, and they didn't expect to see it again, but they were looking for evidence of anyone else, a possible hoaxer who could have been out there, you know, pulling a prank.
Because you would think at that point, that person's going to have to get back to the road to get out.
Right.
Something.
Right. Or he's got to have somebody helping him. He's got to have a vehicle, you know, that you should be able to find some evidence that there's another human out there.
See the campfire or something.
Yeah. But, you know, given where they were, it seemed unlikely that it was a hoax because no one knew that they were there and no one knew why they were there. But May said they felt like they had to rule it out. So they found no evidence of any parked vehicles and didn't see another vehicle on that road for several more hours. And Mays makes a really good point here. He says, hoaxers want to be seen. And he said, we were out on a very remote road. So the odds that, you know, somebody pulling a prank had a friend drop them off in a large ape-like costume on a dark, remote road, just on the chance that somebody would drive by at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Very unlikely.
Very unlikely. Why? I mean, you know, why would you do that? He's right. He's right. Hoaxers want to be seen. It's not a hoax if nobody sees it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you would think, no, he's going to be out there in the daylight. You know, at dusk, he's going to be in an area that the chances are higher that someone's actually going to see him.
Right.
3 o'clock in the morning in pitch black darkness out on a remote road. That's not the spot.
Right.
And he made another good point. He says, this is Texas. You go traipsing around in a monkey suit trying to scare people, you're going to get shot.
No joke.
Yeah.
No joke.
So shortly after that sighting, Mays joined the NAWAC, which I wasn't aware of, so I looked it up. It is the heat.
That's what I screamed NAWAC last time NAWAC. I hit my knee on something. NAWAC!
If you're familiar with NAWAC, you know that it stands for the National American Wood Ape, the National American Wood Ape Conservancy.
I love it.
It's a mouthful, but yeah, I mean, that's I didn't even know they existed.
I didn't either until you and I were talking.
Yeah.
And I may have to join this now.
Yeah, no kidding. But Mays joined NAWAC or the NAWAC, and he is now the director of that organization. And he's an author who has told his experiences with the group and its sightings in the areas of interest, including the Big Thicket in Southeast Texas. So at the time, the superintendent of the preserve was on board with further Bigfoot research, and Mays' group was able to actually set up kind of a base camp there in the Lance Rozier unit and bring in some equipment and continue their research. However, in 2006, a new superintendent took over and the NAWAC's research was no longer welcome. Doesn't go into any more detail than that. I told Adam, I said, I think the actual quote from the article was the welcome mat was pulled out from underneath him. So it sounded like it was more or less a, no, I don't believe in any of this Bigfoot nonsense. Y'all need to get on out of here. You know, that's I would imagine that was a conversation they had.
That sounds about right for small country town. You've either got ardent believers or ardent skeptics. There's no,
no middle ground.
Really people that are saying, well, I don't really believe it, but y'all go ahead and do your funny business out there. You know, and the guy's probably thinking this is just a cover for them to do creepy, freaky stuff. They're out in the woods. They're getting jiggy with it.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to have it.
I can't say that wouldn't have crossed my mind either.
Right.
I'm on board. I'm on board with more Bigfoot research. Hey, come on. Yeah. But I'm also not an idiot. And, you know, like a dozen guys show up, you know, wearing shorts and flip flops, telling me they're going to go sit up out in the woods and look for Bigfoot. I'm going to be like, not like that. You are.
No, this would be people in tack gear that they bought off Amazon. They would have Amazon tactical gear that they're wearing and going, we're getting ourselves a Bigfoot. Not saying that's what the NAWC is, but that's what I picture in my mind of what this guy is seeing and why he's saying, no, you ain't.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, the fact that even then, you know, they didn't let an organization come in there and do research. It doesn't stop people from going out there and looking. And numerous Bigfoot hunters and researchers have focused on the Big Thicket over the years, convinced that if there is conclusive evidence of Bigfoot's existence, it's going to be found in the Big Thicket.
Yeah, the only problem with that is, think about the diverse habitat that's out there.
Yeah.
You've got the swamps. You've got all this stuff. If you're looking for physical evidence of a Bigfoot, it's going to be very hard to find a body, body parts.
Yeah.
You might find some footprints, but as soon as it rains or something else traipses across there, it's going to get messed up.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to find physical evidence. Now, your chances of witnessing one, getting a picture of one is higher, I would assume, in that area. But if you're looking for bodies or what, I doubt you're going to find it, because gators, I mean, they'll eat anything. So.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a good excuse for anything. Why? Well, because gators.
Yeah. And so. I mean, there have been some fairly good footprints that have been found. You know, they're just a lot of evidence of things like, you know, trees being downed without being able to find where they came from.
Right.
You're thinking, oh, there's trees down and you're in the forest. You know, that happens all the time. Sure, it does. But if you've got, you know, a cluster of cypress trees, okay, and then there's, you know, two or three full, like, beech trees or something just laid, you know, kind of in order among these trees, you start kind of poking around and you notice there's no other beech trees around here.
And there's no stumps where they fell over from or,
And you know, they look like maybe they were cut rudimentarily. You know, it's just, you know, this is the kind of stuff that the researchers have found out there. You know, not definitive proof by any means, but interesting nonetheless, because where did they come from? You know, if a human did this, why? What were they doing? You know, why didn't they finish what they were doing? You know, if they were building something.
How many did it take to move such a big tree?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and you wouldn't think, okay, if we've got this particular kind of tree here, maybe somebody was out here trying to build a lean-to or something. Why didn't they just use the trees that were here? You know, why would you try to drag, you know, and I'm not talking about like chopped up, I'm going to drag a, you know, an entire tree from one part of the forest to another, you know, it doesn't make sense.
And one of the big, one of the big things of evidence that people say points to Bigfoot habitation of an area are those, not nests, but like hideouts where you see the woven branches where mm-hmm. they're bent over.
Mm-hmm.
You got one large tree that's bent over and then they're kind of woven together. So that would be something else that, you know, maybe they were with those trees trying to make one of these lean-to things, but didn't have enough anything else, or they got interrupted by some dude in Amazon tech gear looking for Bigfoot out there.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't take just a body to have evidentiary proof of a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But you know, most scientists are not going to take a footprint and, oh, this is a weirdly constructed lean-to as evidence of a great ape or something like that in North America.
Right. Right. And it just, the fact that it is such a large area, the fact that there's other, you know, odd occurrences, paranormal activity, if you will, it just, you know, it just lends itself to the fact that, yeah, why wouldn't Bigfoot be here too? I mean,
well, yeah, the desolate nature of a lot of the area in there, the ability for it to hide, and just the abundance of life in that area. It could have food sources for days. There may be animals in there similar to ones we know about, but evolutionarily different, and we just haven't found them yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the Big Thicket is probably one of the better spots in Texas for Bigfoot to reside. And if you look at the sightings maps, the people that saw it think that too.
Yeah. So. And you know, it's also, there's nothing else really, even with all the diversity, that you could mistake an upright, you know, primate for.
Sure.
You know, there's nothing else really on two legs, but they have talked that the creature that has been spotted in the Big Thicket does sometimes walk on all fours, more like a gorilla. And understand, yeah, the NAWAC is the Wood Ape Conservatory, Conservancy, the American Wood Ape Conservancy. It doesn't say Bigfoot. It doesn't say Sasquatch. You know, they're not necessarily going out there saying, we're going to find this weird mythical creature. But the hopes is that, you know, if they found a North American primate that mm-hmm. has been seen, they could say, this is the species that has been tagged with the Bigfoot name.
Right.
You know,
right.
This is what we're seeing. And again, Adam and I have said this before. If we find out one day that's what it is, and it's not some weird interdimensional creature, some alien pet, or, you know, some, you know, other kind of bizarre intergalactic species, understanding that there has been a North American ape that has managed to avoid detection for all this time would be an absolutely incredible find.
And be amazing.
Yeah. So
absolutely amazing.
But it sure does seem like there, I mean, there are trail cams that have picked up images of this. And of course, they're not spectacular, but they are intriguing, to say the least. There have been photographers that have caught pictures, and there's tons. You can go and look at them. I don't have one or two that I would specifically direct you to. If you just search it, you're going to find them. And this does have more of an ape appearance than other supposed photographs of Bigfoot.
Well, and think about it. It's very near and into Louisiana, which has the skunk ape
yeah,
that lives in the swamps, and the Honey Island Swamp Monster.
Yeah, and so Honey Island is right there in the Big Thicket.
Yep, these have more ape-like appearances, and they live in swamps. There are supposed pictures of them, you know, up to their chest in the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible that this is the same species of creature as to what they're seeing in Honey Island and the skunk ape and all this.
Yeah.
And it's just the Texas version of it.
The Texas version of it. They said this may not even be the exact same creature that is reported from the Pacific Northwest, but it could be a relative, and it could just be the Southern North American, you know, version of, you know, what has been reported, you know, in Washington and Oregon and those areas there.
I think that is highly possible, because I can't remember what episode or what episodes I mentioned this on, but if you think about other creatures that live in multiple ecosystems, like say you take a rabbit that lives in Texas versus a rabbit that lives in Maine,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be different.
Yeah.
Their fur is going to be different. You know, you've got the Arctic hares, which are completely white during the winter because they blend in. And then you've got jackrabbits in Texas, and they got bigger ears to cool themselves off. They're still a rabbit. They're both rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
But due to the climate and how they have to live, their habits are different. Their body shape is different. They're evolutionarily different.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, who, as you guys know, I believe Bigfoot is out there. I don't know what it is, but I believe something that we call Bigfoot is out there. I believe that this is probably what's happening. You've got the Pacific Northwest one that walks on two legs all the time because of the forest that is up there, what it's living in, pine trees, mm-hmm. cedars, all this, and it's having to trudge through this kind of stuff. And then you've got the one that lives in the swamps of the Big Thicket and Louisiana and all that, that can get on all fours sometimes, lives in swampy regions, might be a little bit smaller due to where it lives, how it has to live,
mm-hmm.
how it feeds is going to be different. Mm-hmm. Its interactions with humans are going to be different. And it's all dependent on where it lives. I mean, look at the Yeti versus Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's similar, but totally different ways of living. Looks different. I mean, but I think a lot of it boils down to where it lives and how it's evolutionarily changed with where it lives. So them saying the Texas version of it, I 100% agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think if it's there, that's what's going to happen. And that's why we have so many different accounts from different regions of them acting differently.
Yeah.
Like the grass man, the one that lives up in the plains, and it builds its nest within grass, and it's a tan color versus the dark brown versus the Honey Island swamp monster, which is dark brown to black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it depends on its environment.
Yeah, absolutely. But what do you guys think? I mean, all this stuff, you know, happening, you know, ghost lights, ghost apparitions, you've got buried treasure, Bigfoot. I mean, and again, you've got an area that has such a unique and diverse ecosystem. You know, what else would be possible there? Let us know. I know we've got listeners that have, you know, that either live in that area or have been through it. Tell us what your experience was like. You know, how far into the Big Thicket did you get before you were like, hey, we better find a road, you know? Let us know. And one of the best places to do that is in our Facebook group. It's called The Graveyard. Thousands of members in there. It's extraordinarily active. It's a great place to share personal experiences. No one's going to make fun of you. It's a private group. So it's not like somebody at work's going to get a hold of this and be like, wait, oh my gosh, you know, what are you? Nah, you can get in there. No one's going to make fun of you. It's a safe place. We just love these great stories. Don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And as Adam mentioned earlier, you can listen to the show from the website, but you can also find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You know, that travel mug or that poster or baby onesie, whatever. There's all kinds of stuff you can get with the Graveyard Tales logo on it. Even the noir poster that they had a listener design for us several years ago that you see behind me, you can find that, on our website. You can find links to purchase that. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. It brings us up the charts. It makes it easier for people to find the graveyard. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.